This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Ever hear someone say that when they get to the ballot box, they vote for the candidate, not the party? Ever feel that view describes you? If you do, you'll definitely want to stay tuned. A new study shows that when it comes to independent political viewpoints, very few of us actually have them. Perhaps you've heard of Project Implicit, the international research effort that measures prejudice and bias on all manner of issues. Well, now, two Virginia researchers connected to the project have come up with an ingenious method for probing our political leanings, even when we don't think we have any. Ready to find out if what you think you're going to do this election day is really what you will? Our conversation with psychologists Brian Nozick and Carly Beth Hawkins begins right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Have you decided who you are going to vote for in the next election? If so, how'd you come to that decision? If not, what are you waiting to learn before you make your decision? And whether or not you've already decided, to what degree are you willing to entertain the possibility that there are factors in your political preferences of which you are completely unaware? One key strand of the intersection between politics and psychology is going to be our focus this hour. It's a strand uncovered by two research psychologists affiliated with the international study group Project Implicit. From the University of Virginia, Carly Beth Hawkins and Brian Nozick. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, we are coming to you today from the Charlottesville studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, but our call-in number is the same as always, 888-967-2825. Got a question about how one's personal psychology influences their politics? A theory about how all this works. Our number is easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. Carly, you're still working on your doctorate, but you were lead author on this new report. And in a moment, we'll get into how you and Brian went about conducting the study. But first, I wanted to ask you if you would tell me what struck you most about your findings.
Well, thanks for having us today, Tom. You know, political independence denotes a certain level of objectivity or sort of ability to rise above the partisan fray, to use a popular phrase. And we know from work in political psychology that people are quite influenced by political parties. I mean, you know that just from talking with people that you know.
Well, I know I'm completely objective about all my political
parties. Well, you are, but I think you're a special case. We'll get your data later. But the question that we were sort of interested in is whether independents really are able to overcome some of these influences.
And these are people who consider themselves to be independent of any political party. So we call them political independents.
Exactly.
And this is who you decided to study. And as I said, and I'm going to bring Brian in on this as well in a moment, it's going to be fascinating, I know, to find out how you teased out the information you teased out, especially from people who felt that they were completely objective and they had no political biases. But what I'm most curious about first, Carly, is you're a doctoral student. You're lead author on this new study that's been getting national and international attention. What struck you most about what you found?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So I guess what struck me most about it is that people can say one thing. So people can say they are politically independent. And when we put them in, we give them an opportunity to tell us a little bit more without having to tell us. We give them these tests that we make, and we'll explain. It reveals quite a bit more than what they tell us. It reveals that they really do sort of have some identifications with one party or the other that their self-perception as independent doesn't capture.
Am I picking up, Carly Beth Hawkins, that maybe you weren't all that surprised?
Well, it was our prediction.
But it is surprising because we don't experience ourselves that way, right? When I tell you I am objective, I am independent, I think about the facts and the reasons for some of my decisions, but then I don't do that, that's a surprise to me. It may not be a surprise to you because you know about my biases and you can see me behaving in different ways. But I don't get to see myself that way because I have a self-view of I'm trying to do it objectively. I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm trying to be logical. But I don't get to see how my mind makes decisions. I just experience my mind making decisions. And so I can be biased without even knowing that I am.
So, Brian Nozick, tell us some of how you discovered that what people were thinking was actually different than at least what they were saying they were thinking and sometimes what they knew they were thinking.
Right, right. So the standard way to find out about what someone's thinking is to ask them, right? So you tell me, what political party do you belong to? And some will say, oh, I'm independent. Another way is to try to measure indirectly what might be in their minds that might be different than their conscious beliefs, their desires, what they genuinely want to think of themselves, or even perhaps what they want you to think of themselves. And so we have tools that have been developed in the field of psychology and by our colleagues in Project Implicit to try to measure how much people associate concepts in their memory. And for example, we might be interested, as we were in this study, with how much people associate themselves with the groups Democrat and Republican. And these were all U.S. participants. And you could ask people how much you associate yourself with those two. And that's a person's explicit belief. But we can also measure people's implicit belief by having you do something very ordinary, which is you can imagine it this way. You have a deck of cards. And instead of four suits, you have images of Democrats and Republicans. You have the donkey and an elephant and the different symbols and words relating to those. And then you have words on other cards of that relate to yourself, me, myself, I, or others, other, they, them, there. And you have to sort these cards into two piles as fast as you can. So in one case, we have you sort all the Democrat words and all the words related to yourself into one pile and all the Republican and other words into the other pile. And then we measure how long it takes you to sort those out. And then we shuffle up the cards. We say, okay, now do it again, but this time sort all the words related to yourself and all the words related to Republican into the same pile, and then the Democrats and the other words into the other pile. And what we do is compare how fast can you go putting Democrats with yourself versus Republicans with yourself. Now, this isn't asking you for your conscious belief about how you associate yourself with these groups. Instead, it's just measuring how quickly do these things go together. And the speed with which they go together is an indirect indication of what's going on in your own head, how much those things are associated in your mind. And so we gave independents this test. How quickly can they associate Democrats with themselves or Republicans with themselves? And the interesting thing is that independents as a group, on average, didn't show a strong association between themselves and Democrats or Republicans. But some of them, some individual independents, showed a strong implicit association with Democrat, and others showed a strong implicit association with Republicans, which was different than their conscious beliefs, how they consciously presented themselves.
So, Carly Beth Hawkins, it's my understanding that from what Brian is saying and what you've told me before, that one of the things that can give us a hint about our biases is to get information about how fast our brain works when we're doing associations. And you gave me an example once, I think, Carly, that it's real easy to make a quick association in your mind between the word nurse and doctor, but maybe not so much between nurse and
professor. Yeah.
And so that, Brian, is mm-hmm. is where you go, is the natural functions of the neurological aspects of the brain. If something is happening fast in our brain, it's showing that we already have a built-in association, but if it's happening slower in our brain, then we don't have the built-in association?
That's right. Our mind works by association. And so we try to learn what is linked with what in the world, because that helps us predict the future, right? We know things by knowing how things are related to each other. We know, for example, if we see a doctor, that they're likely to be nurses around, because in those environments, those things go together. And so our brain forms an association between those concepts. And that association makes it easier, and in this sense, faster, to then continue processing, to understanding things about the world. And so the test, which is called the implicit association test, takes advantage of that very ordinary operation of the mind to figure out what do people associate, right? The interest in our case is how much do you associate yourself with different things in the world, political groups or otherwise.
888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. And to you who are listening, I am curious, do you consider yourself a Republican or a Democrat, a liberal or a conservative? Even if you don't consider yourself definitively one of those, do you think that you lean in a direction described by one of those titles? Or do you consider yourself completely independent? If you'd be willing to tell us about it, we'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825, especially if you'd be willing to risk our asking you how you feel you came to the decision about your political viewpoints that you came to. But if you just want to give us what you think your title is, and you don't want to answer any questions, we won't sick the psychologists on you, I promise. Our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight, research psychologist Carly Beth Hawkins and Brian Nozick. They're both from the University of Virginia, and they are both affiliated with the international research effort called Project Implicit. Brian, was there something about the findings here that surprised you?
Yeah, and there are a number of things. And to us, an important part, you know, I described for you how we measure these associations that exist in people's minds. But the surprising part for us was not just to measure those associations, but to see if they actually had an impact on people's judgment, their behavior, their political decisions. Because if it just existed in your head and had no consequence for what you do, it might be an interesting academic exercise, but it might not have any practical value. So what we did in this study was we actually had people consider policies. In one case, it was two different welfare policies. In another case, it was two different policies about children with disabilities. And we just picked up those as things, different kinds of policies. There was no particular interest in those policies. But in each case, there were two plans, alternate possibilities for how to deal with children with disabilities in schools or how to deal with welfare. And what we randomized in the study was which plan was proposed by a Democrat and which one was proposed by a Republican. So a random half of these independent participants who were self-proclaimed independents looked at Plan A and thought it was proposed by Democrats, and Plan B, it was proposed by Republicans. And then the other half had it reversed. If these independents were truly independent, then it shouldn't matter which one was proposed by a Democrat or Republican, right? Because they're independent. They don't care who proposed what. And they say that. But what we found is the extent to which they implicitly associated themselves with Democrats or themselves with Republicans predicted which plan they preferred. So they were influenced without even recognizing that they were influenced by their own implicit partisanship. It was shaping their responses.
And we're going to hit the break in a moment, but I've read some of your study and the two plans that you picked, for example, about welfare, were incredibly different. Can you give us a little description of what the plans said?
Yeah, I can do that. There were two plans, and one was really stringent. In fact, the materials were created not by us originally, by another fellow at Stanford. That it's more stringent than any plan that currently exists. And the other one was very generous, gave lots of benefits.
Okay, so you can hear the music, which means we do have to pause for the break. I want to get a more thorough description of what you used in this test. I think people will be surprised once they hear the specifics to also hear about how people who consider themselves independent, we'll keep the surprise coming up in just a bit more than 1 minute when we continue our discussion about Project Implicit and politics. Research psychologist Brian Nozick is the principal investigator at the University of Virginia's Implicit Social Cognition Laboratory. He's also director of the joint research venture between Harvard University and UVA, known as Project Implicit. Carly Beth Hawkins is one of Brian's doctoral students, also involved with Project Implicit. She is lead author of the new study that we are examining today that has to do with how much, when we tell ourselves we are objective about our political views, that we really are. And it seems that the study found out that not so much. Call-in number is 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. So Brian, or Carly, Brian was describing to us that people would read an article that would describe whether a specific plan was proposed by Republicans or by Democrats. And it would be somewhat surprising, at least to a layperson like me, how much these people who consider themselves political independents would be influenced, not knowing that they were influenced, by having the plan labeled as Republican or Democrat. But you were about to give us more description of what these plans, these, what would you call them, mythical plans, were that your subjects were reading articles about. So one of them you described as a welfare plan that was really stringent. Tell me more about that.
Sure. So this was came from, as Brian said, we know that the independents have these self-associations between Democrats and Republicans. And what we really want to know is whether that means anything. And so to figure that out, we gave them this fabricated news article. And it had these two welfare plans. And one was really stringent, as you said. So it gave very few benefits. I think it was something like $200 a month to a whole family with children. And, very little Medicaid and little for only a little bit of time, 6 months or a year or something like that. Versus the other plan that was a very generous plan. And both of them had, fancy policy names to make them sound very legitimate. And the very generous plan was the opposite. It gave lots of money for a long period of time, 18 months, 2 years. And
so you would think that people who consider themselves fairly conservative would react negatively to the very generous plan. But Brian, that isn't necessarily what happened?
Yeah, we do see an effect of one's ideology to the left or right being related to the preference for the plans. But the surprising part is that if we just reverse who proposed it, if we just, in the article, it says the Republicans proposed this plan and it happens to be generous, and Democrats proposed this other one and it happens to be stringent, we don't point out, make it really obvious that they are generous and stringent. But if you're looking at the details of the plan, it is obvious. Just flipping who proposed it changes people's evaluations of the plan. So when we give that to partisans, Democrats and Republicans, even they are influenced by, and perhaps especially influenced by, who's proposing the plan. Oh, my team's proposing it. I got to go with it. Even though the facts in it are against my beliefs. But then the additional part that we added in this study was that independents, their implicit partisanship, how much they associated themselves with Democrats, Republicans, changed which one they preferred, despite the fact that they had such different content in them. And when we asked them afterwards, what drove your decision, what influenced you to decide which plan you liked, they would say the facts of the plans, the details, all of the things that are in the plan. And when you say, well, did it matter that it was proposed by a Democrat or Republican? They'd say, no. That didn't matter, but it did.
888-967-2825. If you want to talk with research psychologists Brian Nozick and Carly Beth Hawkins, first call coming in from Barbersville. Melissa, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Consider myself an independent, but I would say on the social issues, I'm much more liberal, and on the other issues, I'm much more conservative. And while it sure seems like that would come out in a lot of your tests, things like the associating yourself with liberal words and associating words about you with conservative words, I was just wondering how much of that would come out in somebody like me. Could my mood walking in that day make such a huge difference? And what happens to people like me who feel I associate with both parties, and how does that influence your study? And I'll take my comment off here.
Oh, hold on for us, just in case our psychologists have a question for you, if you're willing to let them ask a question.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
I would like to ask a question, if that's okay. Tell me, do you know how your parents' party membership was? Do you know how they identified?
My parents are very conservative.
Okay, interesting. So there are lots of influences on these implicit association tests. So from what you described when you first described your views, I would say that you would probably fall somewhere in the middle. Now, it's hard to predict any one person's score, but that would be the general thought. But then given what you told me and presuming that you were sort of raised in an environment where you maybe had more exposure to Republican cues in a positive way, that may have built up over time, for example, along with any number of other influences, such as where you work now or maybe your spouse or your close friends could influence you as well.
Yeah, so there's lots of history that goes into the associations that form in our minds that can be different from where we are now, right? Our beliefs change. A lot of people will have an awakening. They'll move from left to right or right to left because something happens in their lives that makes them change their mind. But changing your mind is easier to do in your conscious belief than it is to do on the history of your experience, because that just doesn't go away. It's still in there. And so we can have a lot of the residue of our former lives, our former selves, based on the associations that exist in our mind. So we can't say it with any confidence how Melissa would show on this particular test, but it's likely that that history is there and influential. The other interesting thing about Melissa's comment that it raises about implicit measurement of these things is how malleable they are. And one of the things that she said was about, you know, would the particular context matter or what I'm thinking about? And there's a lot of research evidence that suggests that it would. Calvin Lai and some others in our laboratory are working on problems related to malleability. Under what conditions will different kinds of associations get expressed about the same thing? And so in Melissa's case, perhaps, and this is just a speculation, when the mind is on social issues, she might much more strongly identify with Democrats. And when economics is at the forefront of the discussion, she might be much more strongly identified with Republicans. And these implicit cognitions can shift, much like other things in our lives can shift in surprising ways.
Melissa, you had said that your parents are fairly conservative. I'm curious if they are conservative on the social issues as well as the economic issues.
I would say they're far more conservative than I on every issue. They're very conservative. But I wouldn't say they're evangelically conservative, if that makes any sense.
You know, so liberal on social issues, does that mean that that you're in favor of gay marriage, that you have a sense that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm in favor of gay marriage, and I'm pro-choice, and I guess I would consider myself almost libertarian if I had to put myself in a category. And I know my parents are not necessarily sure about the gay marriage issue and might go to pro-choice if I force them to pick one, but they're uncomfortable on those issues.
Well, you're describing something that... that used to be a fairly significant element of the Republican Party, which is why I wanted to ask you about it. And hopefully we'll get a chance to get into that more a little bit later in the discussion. But I want to thank you so much for taking the time to call us here on Virginia Insight.
Thank you.
Our guests are research psychologist Carly Beth Hawkins and Brian Nozick, both from the University of Virginia, both involved in this most recent Project Implicit study that shows that people's political beliefs are not necessarily what they think they are, or at least not coming necessarily from the kind of decision-making process that most of us give ourselves credit for doing so intelligently. If you have a question or comment for our guests, we have a phone line open for you at 888-967-2825. Next, we're going to Madison, Victoria. Victoria, thank you for joining us. We have several calls, so if you could make your question or comment quick, I sure would appreciate it.
I was just going to say, in response to your earlier comment regarding how you got to where you are, I know what I am today, so I'm not an independent, but when I was a young girl, I was Hispanic in Queens, New York, and naturally I was a Democrat, or everyone I knew was, and except for my parents, when I was a young girl, I participated in the Humphrey election in 68, I was 11, I would go bicycling around with my pamphlets. By the time I was 13, I looked for an alternative party, and I became a Queens Independent Democrat. We didn't have a lot of candidates, but we had policy that we wanted to change. And then when I went to college, as a freshman at George Washington, GW, I went to a meeting to try to get a job on the Hill. And everyone was crowded into this room, and they brought out pamphlets, and they had pictures on the front that said legalize homosexuality, legalize prostitution, and legalize marijuana. And they had Ronald Reagan's picture on it. And this was 1975, late 75. And I was thrown for a loop because I knew him as the very conservative California governor whom I did not like. And it was my introduction to the Libertarian Party. And from there, I got to know more about the policies, and Republicans to me had been old, stuffy men, you know, with cigars. And so I got to know these young hippie-like kids and participated in a lot of what they did. And then I eventually ended
Victoria,
up working
you're
for
giving
Ronald
us
Reagan.
A lot of Victoria, can you hear me? You're
yes,
giving
I
us an
can
awful
hear you.
Lot of history. I'm sorry to get you
interrupted
here, but is the bottom line point that you started out fairly liberal and then in college associated with libertarians, and you had some empathy with their point of view?
Oh, yeah. I was fascinated by that, you know, because
okay,
I was not a social conservative.
Let's get a reaction from our guests.
Yeah, I think this is a very nice example of one of the functions of independence, which is it can operate as a transitional identity. So someone can grow up in a party. And right when we're young, we just adopt what it is around us, right? And people live in enclaves of things that are more partisan, right? There's very few or decreasing number of environments that are really diverse politically. The people migrate. Matt Motel in our laboratory is studying how people migrate into communities that are more morally congruous with their own beliefs. And because of that, we get exposed very early to a particular mindset that may not be one that we continue to hold as we grow up and learn new things and get new ideas. And so the identification of independent can be one where someone adopts it as a way to not totally distance themselves from where they were and not just revert and have a brand new identity, but that say, I'm stepping away from this. My beliefs are evolving, they're changing, they don't quite fit in. And then over time, they may adopt a new political identity, right? And in Victoria's case, that was moving into perhaps libertarianism.
And what I like about Victoria's example, too, is her willingness to abandon, these sort of strong group identities. You said you were riding your bike around it at age 11. That's pretty impressive. In order to pursue a group identification that really does match her beliefs better, your beliefs better. I think that is a very noble pursuit and one that independents sometimes perhaps are pursuing. But maybe that was a stopping point for her, as Brian described.
Victoria, thank you so much for your call. Published in the Bulletin of Personality and Social Psychology, the short title of the new study we're examining was Motivated Independence, if we have several minutes, we might be able to give you the full title later. Lead author of the study is University of Virginia doctoral candidate Carly Beth Hawkins. Her co-author is also her boss at UVA's Implicit Social Cognition Laboratory, Dr. Brian Nozick. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Looks now like we've got a bunch of phone lines open at 888-967-2825, 888-WMRA-TALK. If you'd care to share with us your ideas about where people's political viewpoints come from, tell us about yours or ask a question. You can also reach us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Brian and Carly, we've had a couple of calls now from people who say they were exposed to one kind of political belief in their homes as they were growing up, and then it changed for them as they got older. Interestingly, they were the sort of flip side stories of what they experienced as children. But I'm curious if you have any idea in the kind of work that you're doing that shows what our biases are, even when we're unaware of them. Is there anything that indicates that maybe we have vestiges of that original conservatism we were exposed to as kids in a family of conservatives before we moved on to college and became liberal? Or does that stuff just not show up in your tests?
We can't say definitively, because what we haven't had the opportunity to do yet is track the development of a person over the years of their life. The tests just haven't existed for that long. But there are hints of evidence that are aligned with the hypothesis as you describe it, which is if we get information about people's environments, historical and current environments, it does relate to their implicit responses on these things. So, right, people who live in more conservative communities, even if they themselves are not so conservative, will tend to show stronger implicit conservatism, and vice versa if they live in more liberal communities than they themselves are, right? And if they report having family histories that are more conservative or more liberal than they are, their implicit associations will show a little bit of those relatedness, suggesting that there is a historical trend that is slower to change in our implicit cognition than in our conscious beliefs.
Carly, it sounds to me like one of the things that you were uncovering is that most of us are not nearly as objective about our decision making as we think we are. I'm curious, to what degree do you think the desire to appear objective, or in someone who gives thoughtful analysis to our decisions before we make them, motivates us? And to what degree is it that we're not so concerned about maybe appearing that way to others, but we really want to appear that way to ourselves? I really want to think of myself to myself as someone who has given some thoughtful analysis to a candidate before I decide to vote for him, or an issue before I decide to support it?
Sure, exactly. This question, Tim, is my million-dollar question. You know, to what extent can we understand how biased we are or aren't, and can we try to pursue that? That's sort of the question that, you know, keeps me awake at night. And, you know, we actually do have some interesting results from this paper that I can tell you about that sheds some light on that, although it sounds like perhaps I'll need to tell
you
about
that. Yeah, we have to pause for another break, but it's only a 1 minute break. So when we get back, maybe we'll understand a little bit more about how you, how I, how any of us are motivated by our concerns about what other people think of us versus what we think of ourselves. And if you have thoughts on that, we'd be happy to hear from you, too, when we continue on Virginia Insight. Research psychologist Brian Nozick is the principal investigator at the University of Virginia's Implicit Social Cognition Laboratory. He's also director of the joint research venture that started between Harvard University and the University of Virginia. That's known as Project Implicit. But now it is an international research operation with dozens of affiliates. Universities around the world participate. Carly Beth Hawkins is one of Brian's doctoral students. Also involved with Project Implicit, she is lead author of the new study that we're examining today, which takes a look at what we really believe deep in our minds about politics, even when we don't know that we believe it, or why we believe it, at least. 888-967-2825 if you have a question or comment about that. So this million, 10 million, $100 million question, to what degree am I trying to appear good to others, or to what degree am I trying to appear good to myself, Carly?
Right. And part of that question, I think, is to what extent do we have insight into our own biases and into our own, how much we are influenced by these things that we would prefer not to be influenced by, perhaps. And we do have some results from our study that speak to that. Brian mentioned earlier that we asked our independents, you know, what influenced you about these policies? What is it about these policies that you liked or disliked? And they listed all the details, of course. And we said, well, what about the party that proposed the policies? Did that influence you? And most of them said, no, not at all. And so that gets to this idea that you're saying, we think of ourselves as objective. So we were interested, to what extent are they right about that? So we analyzed the data with just those people that said they weren't influenced. And then we analyzed it with the people who said, well, maybe I was influenced a little bit, you know, maybe some. And we found that both groups were influenced. But the people that said that they were influenced were a little less influenced. So what we think that means is that people maybe do have some insight in our independence, have some insight that they are somewhat biased, but they're still biased, maybe a little bit less. And we're not sure exactly what that means yet, following up on that with some current work, but it's exciting.
Yeah, and this, you know, could be taken as discouraging, right? The sort of the summary result from our work is that people are more biased than they think they are, and they have all this stuff going on behind the scenes that's influencing them. They don't even know it. And so they try to be objective. They try to call, they identify themselves as independent, and nonetheless, they end up being biased. And that could be seen as a very discouraging message with two sorts of implications about what one should do, right? One possibility would be that really what people should do is try to be genuine. If they're implicitly a Republican or implicitly a Democrat and that's influencing their behavior, then what they could get out of this test or other kinds of information is to figure out that, no, I should just call myself a Democrat. I keep voting for them, so I'm not really independent. So that's sort of, let's represent yourself as you are. Another possibility is that we use our identities, our claims of independent or otherwise, in order to represent what we'd like to be, our ideal selves, right? And if we want to be independent or objective or above the fray, whether it's about politics or anything else, then that starts with making the claim that we're going to be.
So I'm not lying to myself. I'm not trying to fool other people. I'm trying to become a better person.
Right. We can represent our identities in order to become them, right? They don't have to follow from what we are. They can be the lead into what we want to be. And that's a great thing about identity, right? Is that we get to decide, what direction am I heading in this world? Am I trying to be someone that's objective? Am I trying to be a member of this party or this group or do these things? Well, one way is to just start saying that you are. And that can lead to lots of new behaviors, new decisions, new activities that will help create the reality that you want. The one caution that I think our research suggests is that it isn't sufficient just to claim it. So if I say I'm independent and therefore I'm independent because I just said I am, that might not be enough. What it might also require is for me to then do some things to help me become more independent or to be more objective in my decision making, to recognize that there are these influences outside of my awareness that could be influencing my behavior. And so to anticipate those and to set up the conditions of my decision making so they don't have impact on my behavior when I don't want them to.
the upcoming election, poll after poll show, that is going to be decided by those people who call themselves independent or who at least claim to have not made a decision yet. And depending on what poll you're looking at, that's just somewhere between 8 to 15% of the electorate. Is what you are discovering going to make it easier for one side or the other to persuade those people who believe they're, or at least are saying that they're independent, to come to one side or the other?
I don't think so right now. I think it could. So I think that it isn't as if all of the independents in our study or otherwise are really just closeted liberals. And if the Democrats just said the right thing, they could get them all. They're both, right? Some of them are Republican-leaning, and some of them are Democratic-leaning, and some are still in the middle. So this really is a there are three sort of hidden groups, I guess, amongst the independents that we've been able to uncover. So there's not a singular message that can be given. But I do think that there are ways that measurement like this could be incorporated into polling or political analysis that could definitely help candidates with their pitches.
Yeah. Politics is one of those domains where most people are willing to tell you what they think. and so you get a lot of predictive power by a few simple questions. You know, what party are you in? Who do you intend to vote for? And those pieces of information are reported by many of the electorate. So when we're talking about the value of implicit measurement in these cases, it's for that minority that are claiming to be on the fence still. And you're right that there are many elections where they're close enough where how those independents fall is going to make or break the success of a party. And what the test...
But if I, as a political operator,
yeah,
understand more about what motivates somebody to call myself independent, and maybe to be one of those people that lists myself in the undecided column longer than most other people. I'm the political operator. I've read your research. Maybe I've waited a few months down the line for your follow-up research. Am I going to end up understanding something that gets me to know how to reach the people I want to reach who claim not to be decided?
Yeah, I think our research would help reveal who may still be persuadable, but not necessarily give the tools to persuade this particular example. The tools to persuade, I think, will be leveraged better by looking at the moral intuitions that give rise to a lot of the ultimate decision making. And we have a lot of research. Our colleagues, Jesse Graham and John Haidt, have done a lot of work on moral intuitions or moral foundations that underlie a lot of political decision making. And those give real levers to how people will respond to political messages. And we can get some, our research, the research that we're talking about here can connect with that by identifying someone's implicit partisanship, which may help identify which kinds of messages they'd be most responsive to in political persuasion.
Our guest on this edition of Virginia Insight, as we come to you from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, research psychologists Carly Beth Hawkins and Brian Nozick, both from the University of Virginia and both affiliated with the international research effort known as Project Implicit. We've only got a couple more minutes to fit in calls, so if you've got a question or comment for Brian or Carly, please do call us right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. I'm going to reveal a secret here. Most of my work goes on when the microphones are not turned on. And that means talking to lots of people, doing lots of research, doing lots of interviews that never end up on the air. Most of them don't even get recorded for air. But one of our previous callers reminded me of a conversation that I had that was confidential, so I'm not going to reveal the person's name. But Melissa was our first caller, talking about how she was fairly liberal on social issues. Her parents were fairly conservative, but they weren't the kind of social conservatives that we hear the most about today. That they would even prefer, I think Melissa was saying, a pro-choice candidate to a candidate who wanted to outlaw abortion. There used to be an element of the Republican Party that was very much that way. I think Melissa said that she's sort of libertarian on social issues. The Republicans who called themselves moderate, even liberals, who felt that personal issues like abortion and sexual orientation should be left to the individual. So not all that long ago, I was talking to a political scientist who used to be part of that element of the Republican Party. But like several people I've interviewed over the past few months, he said, you know, they left me. There's no room for me in the Republican Party anymore. There used to be a whole bunch of us who considered ourselves moderate, fiscal conservatives, but fairly liberal on social issues. And I said, well, then why don't you just call yourself a Democrat? And he looked at me and he actually flinched. He said, well, I'm not a Democrat. I can't call myself a Democrat. I would never be a Democrat. I'm wondering, psychologist Brian Nozick, if you have any sense of where those people have gone.
Yeah, this is a very interesting issue in the changing political landscape of what the parties are and what they represent. And there has been a phenomenon over the last 25, 30 years, particularly, of the continuum of liberal to conservative becoming more strongly related to the continuum of Democrat to Republican. It didn't always used to be that these two things were essentially saying the same thing, but it certainly has moved that direction in a significant way. And that may be a contributor to the rise of independents. So in many election years, more people self-identify as independent than identify as either Democrat or Republican. So if we just go by count, independence is the largest group in many years, not every year, but in many years. And that's a surprising thing, right? These political parties dominate the political discussion. They dominate the political life. And yet neither of them is as big as this other group, which is people that say, to heck with these parties, and or no, I think for myself, or all the other things that go into identifying as independent. And so there are many reasons that people end up converging on independent as an identity. Right? They're apathetic. They just don't care about politics. So why would I bother identifying with a party? They are disgusted by the system. And they think, I hate all of them. I just, I can't be part of that. It can be a transitional identity. And this political scientist might be another example of that, which is I can't, because the party has shifted some, I can no longer align myself with it. But I'm definitely not willing to realign myself with the other one. And then there can be the motivations like the ones that we studied, which is I just want to be above the fray. I want to be objective. I want to evaluate each policy and each person based on their qualities rather than their party membership. And all of these things, I think, are contributing to this massive group in political life that is underrepresented in political discussion, which is independence.
Research psychologist Carly Beth Hawkins, in leading this study, I'm curious if you discovered anything about politics, about political viewpoints, that changed your perspective about anything political.
Yes, when I started this, I didn't think there were any real independents. I thought everyone, everyone is really just putting on this show for other people. And at the end, I think given some of the discussion that Brian just had and a lot of the data that we have, I think there really are some independents who really don't line up with either party. And I think what I've learned the most from this is that the group of independents that Brian describes is so large, is really heterogeneous, and perhaps more so, probably more so, than either Democrats or Republicans, given there are lots of differences in there, too. But that the group of independents is really a group of just different kinds of people that identify as such for different kinds of reasons. And I think some of them really just don't have a place, and it's not that they're just trying to cover something up. But that runs a little counter to the main results, which is we find that a lot of them sort of do fall on one side or the other. But I think that's the thing that I learned the most is that this group is really varied. Yeah, which is exciting for us because we have lots of work to do.
Okay, so who's more intelligent? Who's more reasonable? Republicans or Democrats?
Right. Yeah, I'm going to answer that question.
What's the next step of your research?
Well, I am focusing a little more broadly now, looking at actually the million-dollar question a little bit, which is to what extent are people really motivated to overcome bias, really? And how does that impact their behavior in the way that they think about it?
How long before we're going to see the results?
She needs to finish that dissertation, so hopefully soon.
Our guests have been Carly Beth Hawkins and Brian Nosek, both research psychologists and both affiliated with the University of Virginia's Implicit Social Cognition Laboratory, as well as the international research effort called Project Implicit. Thank you both so much for making time for us.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Andrew Windham, Tony Field, Elliot Majerzik, and Kelly Libby at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you will find links to more information about both of today's guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.